You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jones, Bowden.
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. Those memories never fade, do they? That amazing match at Edgbaston in 2005 with Richie Beno and Ian Smith there, reporting on the final of the World Cup. And actually, it's worth just mentioning Ian Smith, because we've started this virtual cricket club on a Thursday night, and tomorrow night it's Mark Wood who's going to be our guest. We had Stuart Broad last week, Joe Root the week before, and they've both been very entertaining, so Mark Wood hopefully will be as well. Ian Smith, I want to get him on, and I've actually sent him a message saying please join us. Of course, 7 o'clock in the evening Thursday nights. It's going to be 8 o'clock in the morning in New Zealand, but hopefully he gets up early, Simon, and we can get him on, because he would be great, wouldn't he?
Absolutely brilliant. And also, well, he'd be just back from his morning run, wouldn't he? Back from his morning run.
Oh, yeah.
Quick shower, bit of breakfast, and then he'd be ready to speak
morning
to us.
Morning run? You mean morning roll? I mean, he rolls out of bed and probably never moves faster than that. So no chance of that. Anyway, it's been an interesting week. We're just dropping in to say hello and a little mention for the Thursday night virtual cricket club. But also there's been a couple of things happening this week. The England squads for South Africa announced the end of the IPL league section and the retirement of Shane Watson, interestingly, at the end of that, with Chennai Super Kings almost propping up the table. So, you know, plenty to talk about.
Shane Watson, the man who came to you for batting advice.
You love saying that, don't you? You love it. Well, but it's true. It's absolutely true. I mean, I was as gobsmacked as you or anyone else. I mean, Boycott obviously loves the story. Did you notice, by the way, Boycott is auctioning off his memorabilia at Christie's at the moment? There's a lot of lots. I mean, he has stored up so many things in his various pads around the world. And I say pads, I don't think there's any pads in the auction, but there's lots of caps and stumps and memorabilia, like sort of mementos of past achievements, lots of bats, as you'd expect. The bat that he scored his test 100 with in Headingley, his 100th at Headingley, and so many other things. If you go onto the Christie's website, you can have a look at that. I think he must be short of a few quid, do you reckon?
It is bizarre, isn't it? Has he got the bails from Trent Bridge where he ran out Derek Randall?
Actually, I visited him, as I've said a couple of times before, on this podcast. And at the end of our interview, he showed me his trophy cabinet. And the best bit about it was, after he'd showed me, you know, a few sort of porcelain images of him hitting his 100th run and, you know, various china vases and, I don't know, plates and things like that, commemorative plates, he said, look over here. This is really good. This is special. And there was a picture on the wall. And I said, what's that? And he said, it's a picture of the Berlin Wall, right? I said, what? Picture of the Berlin Wall? What's that doing there? He said, well, look, have a look closer. And if you look closer, there is graffiti on the Berlin Wall which says, Jeff Boycott, I love you. Or Jeff Boycott, we love you. Says, Jeff Boycott, we love you. On the Berlin Wall. And someone had taken a picture of it and sent it to him. And, of course, he's got it framed on his sitting room wall.
No wonder they knocked it down eventually then.
Exactly. Yeah, I was thinking, well, you should have had a piece of that, really. Tried to buy a little bit of it. But it's there in Pride of Place. And I made a little video. So if you go onto YouTube, the analyst site on YouTube, there is a little clip of him showing off that bizarre picture.
Now, Shane Watson then. So
Watson. Sorry, I sort of got sidetracked there, didn't I? Shane Watson.
Right, Shane Watson, yes. He called you up. You were driving home somewhere one night, and the phone went, and Shane Watson's on the other end of the line, and he said, Simon, I need some advice about batting. And presumably you thought it was a spoof, a bit like I thought it was a spoof, actually, when Matthew Hayden phoned me in Antigua the day Brian Lara broke his world record. It was an Australian on the end of the line. I just thought, it's just some random Australian who's got my number and is phoning up to want to speak to Brian Lara. So I actually put the phone down the first time. He had to ring back. But anyway, I got them together again. Anyway, I digress there. Shane Watson then, he phones you up and he says, Simon, help me with my batting. And you say,
I had to first check that it wasn't a wind-up, it wasn't a spoof, because it was late at night and, you know, any Australian voice, anyone could have put on an Australian voice and pretended they're Shane Watson. But he did sort of say, well, I'm in Melbourne and it is me, really, and I talked to Shane Warne and he's asked me to call you or suggested I call you. And, I after a bit of sort of examination of why the hell he called me to ask my advice about batting, what he then said, basically, was... he was struggling to convert 50s into 100s, and that was very much true. If you look at his career, 59 tests, only 4 100s in those 59 tests, and lots of 50s, I think over 20 50s. So he just had trouble converting. And he said, I'm just really struggling, mate, to convert 50s to 100s. Can you help? I know you talk to a lot of batsmen about the game, and you know, you do a lot of analysis. Perhaps you could help. I'm trying to sort of tap any resource I can. It does sound a bit like scraping the bottom of the barrel talking to me, really. But anyway, what I thought I'd say, having sort of tried to reason whether he was really being genuine, was actually, if you look at the way that the great run scorers behave, and I cited, obviously, Alistair Cook as one, and people like Jacques Callis and people like that, I'd talked to a little bit about batting. Jonathan Trott actually cropped up in my conversation as well. There's something about them at the crease which they exuded a sort of serenity when they were batting, as if nothing really bothered them at all. You know, they play and miss or snick one through the slips or edge one into their pad or something, and you never know that they'd made a mistake. They just got on with the game and played the next ball. And whereas... you know, I always thought with Watson that he wore his heart on his sleeve and that, you know, bowlers would start to get the sense, especially when he got to 50, and the England played on this a lot. They'd say, oh, you know, he's got to 50, he's going to get out soon. And, you know, they played on that. And of course, he would then look anxious and bat in a slightly more sort of fretty kind of way. And that gives the bowlers more confidence and they get him out and he makes a mistake and off he goes for another 52 or something. So I said, well, you know, what you get from those really successful 100 makers is they just look completely blank when anything bad happens and you start doubting as the bowler that you've done any good. And that immediately puts you as the bowler on the back foot. And, it's just a brilliant way of handling adversity, you know, because it makes the bowler feel almost sort of impotent, really. And I tried to pass that on to him as, don't wear your heart on your sleeve. Don't look so agitated at the crease, whether it's on 20 or 54. Just try and clear it from your mind. And he went, yeah, thanks, mate. That's really helpful. Yeah, brilliant. And kept getting out for 50 loads of times and kept getting his reviews wrong. And, he in the end, he's probably better off playing T20 cricket because you don't have to make hundreds. You go in and smash it. I think that the mental side of the game in the end, although he had a damn good career, 26,000 runs, over 600 wickets, it's pretty good, but he probably never quite delivered at test level that his ability suggested it would.
Well, that was going to be my next question, actually. Did that advice make any difference? I mean, it's bad news for third umpires everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
They'll almost be out of the job from now on. Also, as well, it strikes me, just, you know, been watching the IPL a lot, and CSK didn't have a great time of it. Perhaps it is part of their rebuild now. I mean, Shane Watson, 39, you know, is a team of old lags, really. Sam Curran was in there, but you know, you look at the ages, there's so many players are over 30 in that CSK side, and Watson's decided to call it a day, so I'll have to find a replacement for him. The IPL moving towards a, well, towards the business end, really. Now you've had the league stage and Mumbai Indians against Delhi Capitals in the first eliminator, and then the match on Friday is RCB up against Sunrisers Hyderabad. Yeah, Sunrisers Hyderabad. David Warner's team, so Kohli against David Warner. Every match in the end was of significance, but the last two games actually were quite dreary. Because Sunrisers won very comfortably against Mumbai Indians, who rested a few players, and then the day before, a game I commentated on for the BBC. Actually, what would be interesting is that they could have knocked RCB out. The Delhi Capitals could have knocked RCB out by winning inside 17.3 overs. Didn't really need to. What would be funny, of course, is if they end up playing each other later in the tournament and losing, they could have actually eliminated them. But you could lose to anyone on the day. But RCB are there. Mumbai Indians,
and of course they haven't ever won the tournament. No. RCB have never won it. Neither have Delhi Capitals, actually. They used to be Delhi Daredevils. Yeah. They haven't won it either. But you know, it's one of the sort of beauties of the IPL. And I'm sorry if you listeners don't like it, but it's a phenomenon. And you know, it's completely reinvented the game. It's brought a huge amount of money to the game, and obviously to the players and coaches and all the support staff as well. But the great thing about it is unpredictable. And even what was fascinating was even in that game between Kolkata Knight Riders and the Royals, you know, the bottom team who were at that point, I think, were Kolkata briefly, could win the tournament. It was an amazing scenario where all the teams had won six games, and that's the first time that's ever happened. So there was this incredible kind of narrow gap between the top and the bottom, particularly the middle area of the league, was so neck and neck. And that's, in a way, that's what you want with a league, isn't it? It's uncertainty to the end. And I think it's five of the eight teams have won the tournament, the founding teams. It might even be six, actually. So there's only two left who've never won it. And those two are in the last four, which is great, because it gives everybody a chance, basically.
Yeah, and the organisers, of course, that's exactly what they want, isn't it? They want every match to mean something. It's one of the reasons why in the Big Bash they added an extra team as a qualifier. They enlarged it from four to five. But I mean, the problem with that is it sort of undermines the competition a bit, because you play for 6-7 weeks or whatever it is, and then you've only eliminated three teams. And you know, I'm not sure about that as being the right way to go. But I mean, for those watchers of the IPL this season, I mean, it's been, you know, compelling viewing. I mean, you think of those millions of people without a huge amount to do in India, you know, they're in their sort of COVID situation. Sport is a compelling thing to wrap yourself up in, really, over the last few weeks. And it has kept everybody's attention. And only Chennai Super Kings, you know, were right out of it. Rajasthan were in it right to the end, then dropped out. But yeah, I mean, most of the teams covered by very few points.
And actually, the audience figures 28% up in India. And even in England, actually, the Sky audience figures for the IPL have been, I think, better than they've ever been before. They're even beating pay-per-view of Everton against whoever they were playing at the weekend, which wasn't on live TV. So they were doing the pay-per-view thing, and the IPL did better.
Everton against Newcastle, it was.
Yeah, that got something like 150,000, and the IPL was getting 250,000. So even though you might not like the format, you can't escape its phenomenal impact.
What do you think that was about? I mean, more England players playing? There are obviously lots of British Asians watching the IPL, but also more England players playing as well.
I think the quality of the entertainment, actually. The things like, you know, there were so many brilliant duels. And again, you might not like the sort of slight vulgarity of Andre Russell against Jasprit Bumrah, whoever it is, but, you know, the way that they play. But it still makes quite compelling viewing. And, you know, Chris Gayle was astonishing, wasn't he? He came in halfway through and aged 41. He was belting the ball still out of the park. And went past 1,000 sixes in T20. That's incredible. And there's something. I mean, I watch him back from behind the sofa. You know, it's absolutely intimidating. And I feel a bit sorry for the bowlers, but in the end, you just got to admire his brilliance, actually, and his longevity. And you know, that he's still got the appetite to do it.
There haven't been that many massive scores, though. I mean, there were scores over 200 at the start of the tournament. Especially in Sharjah, there were. I mean, one of the issues of late has been the fact that the dew factor and the fact that, you know, teams chasing, you know, are beginning to win a lot of matches. I mean, I think if that happens, then you've got a bit of a problem, haven't you? And that's one of the problems with day-night white ball cricket is the dew factor. And, you know, everyone wants to bat second. They're desperate about second. And that is, if that mars the knockout stages, you know, say every game is won by the side batting second, then that is an issue, really. Because yeah. I mean, playing in the UAE compared to playing in India, different conditions. But you know, and
haven't they got that spray they can use now on outfields? And I remember they did. Was it in South Africa they used it?
It has been used. I'm not sure exactly how effective it is, but teams chasing of late have dominated in the IPL.
Although, you know, you look at that game between Morgan's Kolkata Knight Riders and Archers and Joss Butlers and Stokes' Rajasthan Royals, and the Royals batted second, chasing a big score, 190, and lost. And they've just capitulated in the end. So you can, I think that there's pressure on the team first, batting first, to make a big score. But if they do, scoreboard pressure can still overcome the dew factor.
Yeah, definitely. Of course. But if it is skewed that way, perhaps just T20 lends itself to chasing anyway. You know, all things being equal, teams generally want to chase, don't they? I mean, early in this tournament, when the pitches were, it was dry in the evening and very hot, teams were actually batting first and winning a lot of games, won batting first. But it sort of changed as the tournament's gone on. I mean, it actually seems to have been going on for ever and ever. And there's another one not far away, is there?
And actually, there's a women's one now as well, which is good. You know, three women's T20s and then a final, which are sort of being slotted in between the men's games. And that's a brilliant opportunity for some of those female players, actually. Very exciting. I'd love to see how they go, because there's some talented players now, aren't there, around. And they can hit sixes as well. So it's great that they have the opportunity.
Is there going to be a women's Indian Premier League soon?
Well, that's the idea of this little trial. You know, see kind of what the audience figures are probably, and, you know, the sponsors, and it's inevitable and it's right, and they should do it. And the Indians have woken up a little bit late, I think, to women's cricket, but they're a force to be reckoned with now. And, you know, it's interesting, actually, that also some of the sponsors in the IPL, men's IPL, are women's products. Like, there's Lotus Herbals, which is a sort of factor 15 moisturiser, which has been worn by some players on their shirts. And the Rajasthan Royals were wearing a company's sanitary pads name, a company that makes sanitary pads, to try and raise awareness about women's periods. Amazing. A company called Nine. I mean, that's an astonishing development.
Yeah, and Manoj Badali, who's one of the co-owners of the Rajasthan Royals, you know, was talking about that. You know, it is a definite marketing sort of move, a deliberate marketing move by the Rajasthan Royals. I mean, they know they have a big audience of women. You know, it makes sense.
40% of the TV audience are women on the IPL, and that's going to grow, I reckon. Because, you know, once you're back in India, showing it in all its glory with all the crowds, you've got Bollywood and cricket, or Bollywood and sport combined, and all the celebrity sort of element and the dancing and the razzmatazz and the buzz of it, you can see why it would be attractive to women. So, you know, it's onwards and upwards from that point of view. We're nearly done for tonight. I suppose we should just talk briefly about England going to South Africa in a couple of weeks' time. And, well, they leave on the 16th. So when's that? About 11 days' time. And the teams have been announced with no Jofra Archer or Ben Stokes. They're rested, I think, which is quite understandable.
For the one-day part of it, they are playing in the T20s, but not for the one-day part. I remember Chris Silverwood saying distinctly earlier this year in South Africa that there's a good chance that Jofra Archer, you know, won't be playing a huge amount of one-day international cricket in the future, simply because of the demands on him. I mean, it's not like he won't play at all, but you know, they will look to rest him as much as possible, you know, or manage his workload, I think is the best way of describing it. And England clearly have got a heavy workload in the new year because of the, well, if it goes ahead, the Test series against Sri Lanka, and then the Test series against India, and then the white ball games against India, and then of course, you know, not long after that into another IPL, and then the, you know, domestic season starts. So you know, you try to manage these things as much as possible. I know that Rhys Topley is back in the squad. Mark Wood is there. Mark Wood's going to join us at 7 o'clock on Thursday evening in the virtual cricket club. We'll give you a link for that if you want to join. It'd be great to have you with us. They've been really successful so far with Stuart Broad and Joe Root. We're on for about an hour. But Rhys Topley's in. He did play one day international against Ireland at Southampton in late August, early September time. But he's not really played. He's not played international cricket for 4 years. But he had a good blast with Surrey. So he's sort of the one name that sort of catches your eye, really. He's back there. I actually saw him play a one-day international in South Africa. The other thing about Rhys Topley is he's easy to forget. He actually played in the last World T20 in India. He played in a famous game, the match against South Africa. He didn't go particularly well. He went 2 overs to 33, but he played in the match. England chased 230 to beat South Africa, which helped them, you know, which ultimately was a crucial win for them and their progression to the final. So yeah, that's good selection.
I like that selection, actually. I think I remember that tour to South Africa when he played in a couple of those games, and he does bring something different. He's tall, he's got some pace, he swings the ball, he bowls a really good Yorker, he's got a great back of the hand slow ball, and you know, he's had to deal with a lot of different injuries and difficulties, and you know, credit to him that he's come through that, actually. And he's definitely got something different about him, so I'm glad he's got the call up again.
And another man, you talk about injuries, another man who's got a bit of pace as well, who's in the one-day squad, and that's Ollie Stone. You know, he's had injury problems, but England are keen to keep him involved. They know that he's got something a bit different, especially when you look ahead to that series in Australia next year. They have a talk of pace. I mean, I know Stuart Broad was saying last week that the most important thing for that series is going to be big runs, but you know, you never know who's going to be fit, do you? You don't know who's going to be ready. You know, Archer might not be fit, Wood might not be fit. So, you know, you need to have as many options as you possibly can.
I think my highlight of the IPL actually was the delivery from Archer to Johnny Bairstow. 151 kilometres an hour, so what's that, 93? Just a slight nip backer, straight through him, big drive, middle stump. Oh, fantastic. And did you see Stokes ramping Pat Cummins back over the keeper's head as well? I mean, that was an incredible shot for six. Oh, I don't know. I mean, and Archer, going back to Archer, I mean, he was astonishingly good in the IPL. It obviously is that format really gets his juices flowing, doesn't it? He loves that adrenaline of coming on in the first couple of overs and getting some early wickets and sending a few little kind of bit of chin music to the opening batsman and then finding a ball. I think he does Warner for a pastime. In the IPL and any other kind of cricket, one day cricket, it just runs a couple across him and he's a walking wicket. I really hope he does stick at the 50 over game as well, and England don't just sort of exclude him or avoid using him in that, because he's dynamic.
They will use him, won't they? They will use him in one day international cricket. They want him, you know, down the line to play in the next World Cup, but it's about it's about managing his workload. If you're playing in all three formats, you know this. We know it. If you play all three formats, it's so demanding. and that you have to look after the quick bowlers. It's one of the reasons, actually, I was a bit surprised, and we have mentioned this, and we might ask Mark about it tomorrow. He'll probably have to be fairly discreet about it. It's one of the reasons I was a bit surprised that he didn't get a central contract. I know money's tight, but that's how you look. You know, central contracts have helped the England management look after the quick bowlers, and they, you know, they're the ones that need to be looked after most and managed most, because it is such a demanding way of earning money.
Mm. Well, we're looking forward to Mark Wood tomorrow night, and hopefully he's looking forward to us as well. So can you join us in the Virtual Cricket Club? If you go to www.patreon.com/theanalyst1, that's where you sign up. And it is £6 for a month subscription, but you do get 4 live events for those for that £6 subscription. And we've got Jack Leach tapped up to come in next week, and hopefully Phil Tufnell the week after. And then we'll start working on people like Alistair Cook and lots of Isha Guha, people like that. So we're going to get a long list of interesting people to get onto the Virtual Cricket Club. I'm also filing some blogs and some audio stuff as well on that site. So it's worth the money. And of course, the money, most of the money goes to the Professional Cricketers Trust as well, which is that charity supporting cricketers who fall on hard times. We are lucky that we're supported in this podcast by Beer 52. And I've got one here, actually. This is the chocolate orange pastry stout. They're a craft beer organization that will send you a free pack of 8 craft beers from all around the world for just £5.95 for the actual postage. If you go to beer52.com/cricket, they are supporting us. And I'm really looking forward to it. I tried one of these beers the other night, actually, and it was a peanut beer. It was dark black, really dark, and it did taste of peanuts more than beer. So it didn't really go with my lasagna, actually. But I'm really looking forward to this one, and some of the other craft beers are really good. So look up that site, beer52.com/cricket. And as I say, there's an offer there for a free pack of 8 craft beers if you sign up to that account. And it's only going to cost you about a fiver. So worth doing. And what we're going to do is we're going to do some tasting tomorrow night. So Simon, you've got a couple. I've got a couple. While Mark Wood's on, who sadly is teetotal, so he can't join in, but he can watch us anyway, tasting these beers. So that's another little sort of vignette tomorrow night.
You dropped some round the other day to my house. Did you? I haven't looked yet in my fridge. Did you drop one round with the chocolate in it? Because I'm quite partial to chocolate.
I don't know. I didn't look, actually. So I dare say. In which case you can. I'll say this one up for you for when we're allowed to meet up after lockdown again. Maybe I'll say this one because I'm a little bit sort of uncertain about a chocolate orange pastry stout. I might go for a slightly more conventional one, but we'll see. Anyway, so if you can join us tomorrow night, at Thursday night, in the Virtual Cricket Club, that would be fantastic, with Mark Wood starting at 7 o'clock. www.patreon.com/theanalyst1. Simon and I will be there. And one little element that we've brought into these Virtual Cricket Clubs is a little quiz in the middle with the player, and we call it How Well Do You Know Yourself? And we ask them quite specific questions about their career, about their life, one or two things they might not know. Are they a real expert on their own career or not? And that's quite revealing. And, you know, Stuart Broad actually struggled with a couple of questions. I enjoyed the question that I asked him about what kind of food did you always ask for as a kid when you went to a posh restaurant? And his father told me, Chris told me, that the answer was dippy egg. He always wanted a dippy egg with any dish, whether it was Chinese, Indian, English, whatever. But of course, Broadie couldn't remember that. So he lost a mark there. So anyway, at the moment, Joe Root is leading the How Well Do You Know Yourself quiz. 6 out of 10 is what he scored. We'll have to see if Mark Wood can get better. Anyway, hope you can join us for that on Thursday night, 7 p.m. in the Virtual Cricket Club, www.patreon.com/theanalyst1. See you then.
Goodbye for now. Please join us at 7 o'clock on Thursday.
Podcast Network. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.